Please note that the views expressed on this program are those of the individuals who speak them, and not necessarily those of Portsmouth Community Radio, its Board of Trustees, members, volunteers, or underwriters. Good evening and welcome to Spirit Radio. I am your host, Willie Hassel. Along with my co-host, Lynn Nickerson, we will take you on a journey into the unknown, where the paranormal becomes the normal, a journey to a world cloaked in darkness, where reality becomes a thin veil. So sit back, relax, and join us as we venture into the shadows, the darkness, the unknown, and back. And good evening once again, and welcome to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience. I am your host, Willie Hassel, your gatekeeper to the dark side, your guide to the realm of the unknown, the unseen, the unthinkable. And, of course, she is the always lovely, she is the mystical, she is the mysterious, Lynn Nickerson.
And good evening, Willie. How are you doing?
Hi, how are you?
Great, considering how freezing it is out there.
It's freezing out there right now, but, you know, I just heard the weather.
And?
59 degrees Christmas Eve.
I know, next week it should be very nice, starting Sunday. So at least it's not snow. I'm very pleased about that.
At least it's not snow.
My heart is rejoicing.
Well, good. I always like it when your heart rejoices. So, shall we get right to it here?
Why not?
All right. Well, this week on Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience, we welcome to the show Alex Matsuo. And Alex is an actor, director, and playwright, as well as a paranormal investigator and author. She grew up working in theaters since she was a young girl and became fascinated with the connection between theaters and hauntings. Alex has been studying the paranormal seriously for the past 10 years and is the founder of the Association of Paranormal Study. In her recent book, The Haunting of the 10th Avenue Theater, Alex explores San Diego's renowned 10th Avenue Theater, home to an unlikely cast of ghosts, from apparitions of a child who died a tragic death to a suicidal pastor. There is unfinished business lingering in the walls of this former church turned theater. So why don't we now welcome to Spirit Radio Alex Matsuo. Matsuo. Good evening.
Hi, Alex.
Good evening, Alex. How are you?
Hello.
Hi, welcome to the show.
Welcome. Glad you could join us tonight.
So have we got a good connection?
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, our pleasure. So you're a very busy person. This is your third book?
Yes, actually, technically it's my fourth. I did write a non-paranormal book maybe a year ago. But I like to keep myself busy.
Yeah, with all your directing and everything. Your books, did you self-publish the first three?
Yes, I did, actually.
Wow, very enterprising of you.
Yeah, it ended up being a good decision, at least for me, because I could write what I wanted and sort of do things my own way and such.
Yeah.
It ended up opening the doors to becoming published, so it ended up working out.
That's fabulous. So you're presently in a production, is that right? Or is it your production that you're the playwright of?
Right now I'm taking a little break. I'm actually getting back into the swing of things next month. We'll probably be in a few productions for the next 6 months. So plus going to some conventions on the East Coast and making some appearances. And yeah. It's going to be 2016 is already looking pretty good.
So where are you right now? What state are you in?
I am in North Carolina.
Oh, okay. So you actually are on the East Coast. Well, what town?
Yes, I'm in Raleigh.
Oh, okay. Great. Well, we might as well jump right into 10th Avenue. So I was going to do a little intro here, and I'm going to take some liberty and make a rather broad statement, but I think you'll see the truth in this and agree with me. Ghost stories mm-hmm. are kind of like Westerns. Everybody loves a Western, and everybody loves a good ghost story.
That's right.
So, Alex, this is where your story begins. As a child, you had a few experiences in your home, but not so much so to the point that you'd consider yourself psychic. But in the pursuit of your theatrical dreams, the paranormal was hovering just backstage in the shadows of your mind, waiting for some attention. So you began an investigative team. So what I'd like to know is if you could tell our listeners a little bit about the details of your paranormal experiences as a child, how that evolved, including the instance where the woman hovered over your bed.
Oh, yes. My first and most memorable paranormal experience took place in a little river town in Kentucky called Catlettsburg. And it was at my great-grandmother's house, or as I called her, my mamma. The house was very old. My grandmother was born in that house. My great-grandfather died in the house. So the house had seen both life and death, very old. And every summer when I was growing up, we would go to Catlettsburg for a few weeks, you know, because I was off of school and everything. And I was always very uneasy in that house.
Really?
I didn't know really what was why I was frightened all the time, but especially at night. And at night, the walls would bang, and it always, you know, there were sounds where someone would be walking around the house, and I would ask my mama was making that noise, and she would say, oh, it's the devil trying to get in. Don't worry, child, just pray. So when you're 7 or 8 years old, that's rather terrifying. And the room I slept in had a very hard mattress. It was one of those old mattresses where they didn't really sink. They just tipped to the bed tips instead if someone were to sit in the bed. And my mama knew I was always scared at night, so she would come sleep with me. And tradition, I'd be laying down, and I would feel the bed tip, and my little body would slide down, and it would hit my mama, and it would stop me from flying off the bed. But there was one night, and of course it was stormy, because that's where all terrifying paranormal experiences happen. And I was laying in bed, and I was hoping, you know, my mail would come in soon. I was between 6 and 8 years old, and I was laying there, and I felt the bed tip, and I had this feeling of relief of like, oh, good, Mamaw's here. The bed tipped. And I slid completely off the bed.
That's amazing.
So there was nobody there. And the bed just, I looked at the bed and I just watched it flatten out like someone had gotten up. So.
That's creepy. Who do you think was doing that?
Started it all.
Who do you think it was, Alex?
I think with the history of the land and such, I think it might have been a family member. It could have been my papa, my great-grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he was trying to, since my mamma was watching TV, maybe he was trying to come in and give me some comfort.
Well, dump you on the floor?
Yeah. Well, he tried. Didn't he?
Yeah, he tried to give you comfort.
He did his best.
But go ahead.
Yeah, you know, end up, you know, scarring me for life, but, but in a good way, I guess. But, that's where, I think that was my first experience where, okay, this is more than just I'm hearing sounds where, you know, those can be debunked, but I actually had that experience. And you know, I would have little experiences like that throughout my life when I was a kid. And I was laying down in the room that would become my bedroom when I moved into my grandmother's house in San Diego. I was laying on the bed, and I was just looking up at the ceiling. There was nothing up, you know, nothing above me. I was at my grandmother's house after school doing homework, but I decided to lay down instead, and something smacked me on the forehead.
Oh, jeez.
So I was about 10 or 11 when that happened, but again, it didn't feel threatened or anything, but that room actually ended up being becoming my bedroom after my mom and I moved in with my grandmother, which sort of leads into the whole having the whole situation of a woman hovering over my bed. That one happened my senior year of high school, and I was having an interesting year. I decided to homeschool instead so I could join a performance group, mm-hmm. A drama group that traveled. I couldn't go to public school, so decided to homeschool. And it was one night, I don't remember specifically the time of year, it was like early spring. It was like we were getting towards the end of winter, but I use that in quotation marks because there's really no winter in San Diego. So,
That's true.
I was laying in bed. I just laid down, just, you know, staring up at the ceiling again. My bed was in a similar position to this incident that happened before. And all of a sudden, I couldn't move. Like, I tried to move my legs to readjust, but I couldn't move. And my arms weren't moving, and it was very similar to sleep paralysis, except I was completely awake.
Yeah.
And I opened my eyes, and I saw this outline of a woman, and she was completely black. And I'm not talking, like, race-wise, but her skin was, like, charcoal black. And she had this thing around her head, almost like maybe she was a nun or
like a hood
something, but it absolutely terrified me.
I can see why.
Pardon?
I can see why. It would terrify me too.
So I was terrified, and I felt her breath on my face and whispering in my ear, like licking my face. I mean, it was absolutely, I was terrified. So I tried to scream, and I couldn't. I couldn't tell you how long the experience lasted. I mean, it was probably maybe a minute or two, but it felt like an hour. So, you know, finally she just disappeared. And I ran to my mom's room, and I told her what happened. And my mother never let me get into the paranormal when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't even read the Goosebumps books. I couldn't watch anything on TV. Anything paranormal related was off limits. So when I told my mother this, she was freaked. She freaked out. And I ended up not sleeping in that room for a good 2 or 3 months. And even when my cat would walk by my room, she would hiss at it like there was something in there.
Yeah.
And my mom's room was down the hall from my bedroom. So when I was laying in bed, she had a California king. And from where I was laying, I could see my room down the hallway, and it was always blacker than black. And it felt like someone was watching me. And eventually we had people come in to pray over the room, but then they said, you need something else. You need someone stronger to come in. And I'm like, okay.
A different approach.
A prayer group that came in and prayed over my room.
Mm-hmm.
And ended up getting the Greek Orthodox Church involved.
Really?
And the reason why Greek Orthodox was because my Southern Baptist Church didn't want to touch the situation. And someone in my drama group, he was Greek Orthodox, and my mom was talking to her mother about what happened. And, you know, the mother said, well, let me talk to my church and see what we can do. So we actually had, like, a Greek Orthodox blessing/deliverance happen in my room, and they gave me a spray bottle of holy water.
Mm-hmm.
Not just a little vial or just a little bottle of water. They gave me a spray bottle, like the industrial spray bottle that janitors use. And basically, anytime I felt uneasy or my cat hissed at something, you know, they said, spray the holy water in the shape of a cross. So that's how that exciting situation ended.
Well, Alex,
every time I slept in that room, I could eat. Sleep with the lights completely off. I always had the TV on.
Yeah, understandably so. Do you think it sounds a lot like the old hag myth? Doesn't it to you?
Yeah, very, very similar.
Yeah.
And I had researched sleep paralysis because I was really trying to find what could have explained this. But between the fact that I was completely awake when it happened,
yeah,
and then, you know, my cat responding to it the way it did, like she would look in the room, hiss, and run away. Like, she wouldn't even go into it.
Yeah. That's not sleep paralysis.
The whole situation with the church, or the Greek Orthodox Church.
Yeah, you know darn well that they knew something was going on.
Yeah.
Okay, then let's fast forward to your interest in the 10th, the theater at the 10th Street. How did that come about?
So I got involved with the 10th Avenue Theater basically while I was in college. It was a brand new performance space. I knew nothing about it, except I was doing a show that was being performed at the theater. So my first time there, you know, it was a little creepy looking, but it was also still, like, being remodeled and furnished, developed, and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But couldn't couldn't help feeling like you were being watched, especially up in the booth, like from the lighting booth. And and pretty much, you know, my friends who are in tech, or techies, you know, like lighting designers, lighting operators, set builders, set people, they would say the same thing. And because the 10th Avenue Theater at the time was such a cheap space, I was doing a lot of shows there.
Mm-hmm.
So I was there a lot, and I got to know a lot of different people, including the owner. His name is Jeff Kodak. And he disclosed to everybody that, hey, there are a few ghosts in this place. And, you know, but what's funny was a lot of the reactions from people were, oh, I already knew that. And that sort of opened us to, wait, what do you mean you already knew that? Like, did Jeff already tell you? I was like, did Jeff tell you already? And all these techies and people who were renting out the offices, they said, no, we actually had experiences, and we, especially a child running up and down the stairwell in the building. And so that's when we found out that the theater used to be a church. It used to be a chapel.
Right.
It was associated with one of the biggest Baptist churches in San Diego. And that church's building sat next door to the theater, but then the church picked up and moved to another location, so they sold the two buildings, one of them being the 10th Avenue Theater. And Jeff bought it because it was a really good price. And I kind of laugh at that because how many ghost stories do we know?
Typical.
Where
yeah.
Buy the building, and it's for a really good price.
Mm.
So,
at what point did you start your team? Was it just about that time?
Yeah, actually, I started my team about 2 years after my first experiences at the 10th. And essentially what happened was I had graduated from grad school, and then that was when I had more time to do my team. And I talked to, I talked to Jeff about possibly investigating there, because I'm like, hey, you know, it'd be a good training ground for my team. That's really the reason why I wanted to get into the 10th so bad, because it seems like, you know, but now with the haunting, you know, it's fairly quiet. That was an incorrect statement at the time, but it was fairly quiet. And what really got it going was in January, I had a stage reading for one of my plays. And basically what happened, my person who was supposed to work the lighting couldn't make it at the last minute. So I gave my actors very strict instructions. I said, don't start the play until you see the lights in the audience go down. And they said, oh, okay. So after I did my introduction, you know, in my heels, I'm running out of the stage area and running up the stairs to get to the booth so I can turn the lights down, fumbling with my keys because you can't get into the booth without a key. Fumbling with my keys, I open the door, and I hear my actors starting, and I'm like, what are they doing? And then I look, and the lights to the audience have turned down.
Wow, so the audience lights were turned down and the stage lights came up.
Yep, basically.
Wow, that's kind of creepy. Well, must have been that shadow in the sound booth.
Yeah, somebody was helping you out there.
Yeah, pretty much. So that was my, okay, I definitely got to get into this space.
Okay. So what happened? You wound up finding at least three entities that you can identify, but there were other things going on too. So how about if we, well, let's cover all of them, because I think the British Lieutenant and Missy and the Pastor have really interesting stories.
Yes. So the British Lieutenant has a really, really interesting origin story, because I have been very much fascinated with ghosts from World War II. Mainly because my grandfather fought in World War II as a Japanese-American soldier. So very much into Roswell history. And the story was, it was in the 40s. There was a doctor who put him, okay, so I guess I need to go into the backstory of the chapel. So the chapel was commissioned by the church to be built so that military would have a place to go pray and worship 24 hours a day, no matter what time they came into port.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was, there was a military doctor who came into port, and he had just come in from Japan, And so he come in to pray over his patient, specifically one, a British lieutenant, who, who passed away basically while the doctor had his hand over the lieutenant's heart. Excuse me, I am battling an illness right now.
Oh, so sorry.
Ooh, pardon me, just a moment.
The British lieutenant was supposed to be one of the entities that Alex ran into. And apparently the doctor that was attending the British lieutenant had his hand.
Okay, I am back.
You're back? Okay, great.
I'm losing my voice from it, too.
So I was just saying the doctor had his hand over the British lieutenant's heart at the time that he died?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's really touching. Are you okay there, Alex? Are you with us, Alex?
Did we lose her?
Oh, I'm beginning to think we did.
I think we just may have.
We're very close to the bottom of the hour.
Yeah, so if she...
Okay, excuse me.
There she is.
Oh, all right, good. We thought we lost you.
Yeah, no, I'm here.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Can you talk okay?
Interestingly enough, every time I talk about any of the stories with the temp, I get really sick. Or I start coughing a lot.
That's interesting.
So, yeah, really weird. The doctor had his heart over, or his hand over the British lieutenant's heart, and the heart stopped beating in his hand. So that particular experience really shook him up. And so the doctor went to go pray for his patient, and then he started to have convulsions, like a seizure, in the chapel, passed out. And to the church staff's knowledge at the time, they didn't really know what had happened, but the doctor woke up and recovered just fine. So a little bit of a confusing experience. But afterwards, the church staff started to hear orders being in a British accent. So, and that chapel area now is now the main stage area. And where, this is probably my favorite part, where the British lieutenant is seen is primarily up in the lighting booth.
So,
before Jeff had ever really revealed to anybody what specifically the ghost stories were at the time.
So do you suspect that it is the British lieutenant that is up in the lighting booth most of the time? Do you think he's the shadow you see?
Yep.
Okay. Well, then apparently he's
got... What's really cool is I've had a few psychics go through the main stage area, too, and they will actually pick up on the British lieutenant. They'll see a man in a British lieutenant's uniform, which is a very different uniform from what we've seen, soldiers.
Yeah.
And they'll actually see images that the lieutenant saw when he was at war.
Oh, my gosh. That's amazing.
Right?
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Okay, how about Missy, then? 10-year-old Missy.
Missy. Okay, so Missy, while I was a preteen girl, she was a part of the church's youth group. And so when the chapel wasn't being used by the military, it was also being used for, like, town meetings, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts. But also the church's youth ministry was stationed there. So the rooftop, there's about 4 floors total to the 10th Avenue Theater. The rooftop was kind of like a gymnasium. There was a basketball court, tennis court. And it was a hot day in October, which happens in San Diego. I have to tell people that. And Missy wanted to go inside, and her youth pastor said, "No, you need to wait. I have to find someone to escort you down because Missy wanted to go eat." So Missy didn't want to wait in life, so she ran down the stairs instead, and the pastor chased after her, and she kept saying, "Catch me if you can, catch me if you can, catch me." And then he heard a thud, and Missy had lost her footing. And she basically hit her head on the pavement and she cracked her skull open.
Oh, I bet those steps are lined in steel, aren't they? I think they are. I think the edge of the steps are lined with steel to make them stronger.
Yeah.
It looked like that in the picture. So she must have really, that's a shame.
She kind of wanders around the
10th, right? She wanders just about everywhere she's heard.
Just about everywhere. She goes all over the 10th. She is a very conscious and aware spirit.
Hmm.
I don't think I've ever talked to anybody that is so conscious and aware. She even scared the living daylights out of two of my team members who were Marines. at the end of the night, probably there from the very first experience at the 10th Avenue Theater, Jeff needed to use my key, and he said, "Hey, just leave a key on the fourth floor in my office." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." At the end of at the ghost hunt, though, I said, "Oh shoot, I forgot to return the key," and so I sent my two Marines, Jay and Hurst, sent them up to the fourth floor to return the key, and pretty much I was joking with Jay's wife. I said, "You know, wouldn't it be funny if they saw a ghost and they come running down the stairs?" And sure enough, I hear the guys screaming and they're running down the stairs and Jay is skipping like four or five steps at a time. And they heard a young girl on the fourth floor say, "Mommy."
Mommy.
And they caught the audio on an audio recorder and on the camera's microphone they were using.
Excellent. So, excellent.
Class A EVT.
Well, okay, Alex, we're down at the bottom of the hour, so I'm going to interrupt you for just a moment, and we're going to come back in just a couple of minutes here. We're talking to Alex Matsuo, and she's the author of The Haunting of the 10th Avenue Theater, actually in San Diego, California. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Don't go anywhere. Supernatural Magazine, the UK's newest paranormal magazine, provides support to Spirit Radio, The Paranormal Experience. It is the magazine's goal to bring every aspect of supernatural news and research from around the world under one roof to create a universal platform for all those interested in the supernatural. More information is available at supernaturalmagazine.com. You are listening to Spirit Radio, The Paranormal Experience on WSCA 106.1 FM, and we'll be right back after this short break.
listening to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience on WSCA 106.1 FM in Portsmouth's West End. And from the community calendar, the Pontine Theater will again be presenting Westfest, New Vaudeville Festival, December 26th through 30th at the Pontine's West Studio Theater, 959 Islington Street in Portsmouth. This family-oriented festival features magic, mirth, and mayhem. Each performer is skilled in multiple forms of entertainment, including physical comedy, juggling, clowning, and more. Showtimes are scheduled for 2 p.m. Ticketing and other information can be found at info@pontine.org or by calling them at 603-436-6660. Yeah, we have some upcoming guests to the show.
Yes, our upcoming guest list starts with the 26th of December, and we're taking that off for Christmas. January 2nd, the topic of this week's show will be Maritime Mysteries and Haunted Ships of the New England Area. Willie and I may also have a surprise guest in the studio to talk about some personal experiences with seaport ghosts here in Portsmouth. January 9th, Jeremy Dontremont is returning, and he'll be discussing his latest trip to the West Coast, visiting the lighthouses out there, as well as letting us in on some of the ghost stories. January 16th, we're hosting Valerie LaFazzo and Mike Stevens, and they're very good friends of ours, and they're founders of the Seacoast Saucers Group, which is a group people can attend and air their personal concerns about UFO experiences or sightings. January 23rd, we welcome Andy Kitt. He's author and founder of the Kitt Research Institute of Consciousness Studies, and he'll be in the studio to apprise us of his new program schedule, which includes his upcoming speakers and workshops. And January 30th, we're welcoming back Reverend Betty Comerford and her writing and investigative partner, Steve Wilson, and they'll be discussing their book, which was jointly written, The Reluctant Empath. And February 6th, Sarah Sutherland is another one of those people dogged by her psychic experiences. Her book, Haunted by the Abyss, is a first-hand account of encounters with a demonic force, aliens, and spirits from a Missouri cemetery. And there's more. It'll be an interesting show. And that's our guest list.
All right. And so now we go back to the phone with tonight's guest, Alex Matsuo. Welcome back to the show, Alex.
Welcome back, hello. Alex. Hi.
Hopefully you had a chance to get over your coughing a little bit there during the break, huh?
Doing a little bit better?
Oh, yeah.
Good.
Good. We're good.
So the piece of evidence you got, the mummy EVP, that was one of your only pieces of evidence, wasn't it?
At the time, yes.
Yeah?
At the time. And, of course, you know, after that experience, I thought, okay, we have to come back. And at the time when I had asked Jeff, you know, hey, can I investigate the theater, because we had already built a really good rapport, he essentially gave me the keys and told me to have fun. So I had unlimited access to the theater, which
fabulous.
Was great.
Yeah.
Just as long as we weren't interrupting any productions, obviously. But, yeah, so we would have many more experiences at the 10th, and they're all depicted in the book, and each was really interesting. And even after the book came out, obviously there's been an elevated interest in the theater now. And
oh, that's terrific.
I have to say, the ghosts there love to show off, I guess is a good word.
They want the attention,
huh? Connections with people.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like sometimes they're just dormant until somebody shows them some interest.
Exactly.
Mm.
Exactly. Especially after a show or if there's an event going on, like a wedding or another kind of performance or a business meeting, I found that the activity was so much higher than if we just went in on an evening where nothing was going on.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I wanted to discuss that theory with you in just a minute. But, you know, something that you use, your equipment is interesting, primarily the Gansfeld, the sensory deprivation.
Yeah.
Would you like to tell us about that a little bit?
Yes, the Gansfeld experiment is very much a parapsychology-related tool. It's actually very much used when it comes to remote viewing. Mm-hmm. Also has been used for basically to see the brain's connections, you know, if messages can be sent telepathically. Usually there is a sender and a receiver to living people where someone is under the gong cell, which involves having ping pong balls cut in half over the eyes, white noise over the ears, and a red light in front of them. So basically the person A, who's the sender, is sending messages to person B, like, or a distinct image or a word, and they see if person B picks up on it. We've done the gong cell in that situation too. And actually a few groups have used the gong cell, and people have very much have tried it to see if it enhances spirit communication. And we use the gong cell in spirit communication at the temps, and actually I think I've had about maybe 6 or 7 people under it at the temps, and very fascinating in terms of what kind of messages they receive, depending if they have psychic abilities or if they don't, or if they just want to see what they pick up on. Some people have heard screams over the gong cell, like Missy screaming as she fell down the stairs, or images of early San Diego, like when the church was built.
That's fascinating.
Really cool images and messages have come through. And honestly, I feel like whatever kind of avenue of communication that is being used, they definitely, you know, Missy and the lieutenant, and as well as the pastor who's haunting the place, they very much use it.
You know, that's operates on the similarly as the principle for the psychomantium that was popularized by Dr. Raymond Moody, and then going even farther back in history, it's similar to the Greek necromantian. I believe that's how you pronounce it. And it's sort of a form of scrying, and you can do it. The method is pretty, well, the principle is very similar. The method just varies a little bit. And I had never heard of your Ganzfeld method. I think that's really cool. So you have to be stationary to do that?
Yes, you do have to sit down and do that.
Yeah.
You have to basically sit for a little bit, but I did create a mobile gong cell too, and I actually used it on the Queen Mary.
Really,
if you know, you have the white noise on a mobile device, and we actually had a head helmet with the red light on it, and then we just picked the ping pong balls over the eyes, and that way we can travel with it a little bit. But the Ryan Research Center in Durham, North Carolina, about 20 minutes from where I live, they have a huge gong cell room. It's probably the coolest thing I've ever seen.
Really?
So,
I hadn't heard of it before I read your book.
Oh yeah, it's a really interesting experiment, and I know the Ryan has done a lot of work with it.
Well, I was going to say a lot of
one organization that.
Psychological experiments have used it before. I have seen it on TV, but not as a ghost hunting tool, which I think is really appropriate.
Oh, neat, yeah. It's very much so, because, I mean, if you think of it, the people who are utilizing it as a sender-receiver situation, they're living, so, you know, why not do it when you're deceased as well? You
sure.
You never know, I guess.
Yes. Well, you had a question?
No, I was just going to ask about the ping pong balls. I mean, are they just solid, like half ping pong balls, or do they have a hole in them to let light in? Or?
Basically, they're cut in half, the ping pong balls are, and they're just over the eyes. It's to create that seamless white plane.
Oh, okay. Like a little cup, a little white cup over your eye.
Yeah, yeah. I just wasn't sure if there was a hole in the center of it.
Yeah.
And then you're
ping pong balls, or some groups have also painted goggles white and put it over their eyes.
Seen that too.
Anything just to make a white. And then what do you use for a red light? Is it just like a red light bulb or something?
Yep, red light bulb.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Well, there was something else that you discussed. Like you did just mention that after a theater production, when the energy is really high, that the theater seems to be a bit more active. And you had mentioned the tulpa theory. So maybe you'd like to tell our listeners about that. And I wanted to discuss that with you for a minute.
Okay. We can definitely do that. So the tulpa theory essentially is a thought form theory where if someone or a group of people put enough energy into an image, a person, a being, then eventually they will manifest into a conscious living entity, I guess you could call it. Very much a Buddhist, comes from Buddhist tradition, and where, you know, the monks who have extraordinary levels of concentration, far surpassing anything that I possess. Basically, you're kind of creating your own ghost. And in the 70s, a group of Canadian researchers basically used that concept and created their own ghost. And it's called the Philip Experiment. So if anyone wants to look that up after the show for reference, but I've always thought about, considering as an actor myself and all of my, you know, friends who are actors, how much energy we put into creating our characters, perhaps, and not only us creating our own characters, but audience investing into our characters, fellow actors investing into our characters, you know, thinking this character into existence. Could it be possible that we're kind of creating our own ghost, so to speak? And after the production is over, depending how long the production was, does this thought form or tulpa have enough energy to survive on its own? And if it does, where do they go? Are they bound to the building where they may have been created, or do they move around? So, and this is especially true when it comes to fictional characters from plays that are being performed, you know, like, let's say, Willie Nelson from Death of a Salesman. You know, could there be a tulpa of Willie Nelson going around? considering how many people have done that play, kind of makes you wonder sometimes. But also, let's think, you know, think about the characters that are based on real people. There's Leo Frank from Parade the Musical, which Leo Frank was the one, he was wrongly lynched after he was falsely accused of murdering a young girl in Atlanta in the early 1900s. Mm-hmm. The musical took off in the theater world, and I had a friend who played Leo Frank in a production, and he actually told me, he said, "Alex, I actually felt like I was being possessed by Leo, like he was getting a second life through me."
Mm-hmm.
So
I have heard that.
In an attempt to tell a story.
You know, dead concert pianists channeling their energies and their creative abilities through a present-day pianist. I have heard that. But if people really believe that they're creating a ghost, how would they tell the difference between an existing entity and what they think they've created? How would they make that discernment?
I guess if you were engaged with the entity, I guess, asking questions, you know, asking about their history, their life, and seeing if it lines up with history.
Well, do they actually get responses from
history? And
do they get responses from these characters or these ghosts that they create? I mean, do they get, like, voice EVPs, something other than just innocuous rappings or noises? Like, how do you know who is?
It would have to be, like,
go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Using noises, rapping, that's a huge tool. Depending, and I honestly want to give this a try one of these days with a longer running production, and luckily there is one in San Diego. What about having the actor who played that person engage in conversation with that character or that tulpa or that thought form and see if that makes a difference in dynamics? Because sometimes it does, I believe.
Well,
when you have the person who invested that energy, their energy into that tulpa's creation.
Well, let's say that, you know, a bunch of Buddhists are sitting around and they're trying to create this thought form and they think they've done it. Do they get, like, vocal feedback from the thought form that parrots back to them what they thought they created? Or is it just something that has come in and started, you know, responding, but you don't know exactly what it is? How do you discern whether or not it's something that was created or if it was something that was just already there?
I think you would have to one use repeated. What's a good word for this? Repeated interactions, asking the same question several times and looking for consistencies.
But do you get answers? I mean, you get vocalizations, or you get like a response and spelling something out on the Ouija board type thing?
Yeah, I would say using that. Vocalizations would be, well, okay, yeah. But I've heard the vocalizations and forms of singing. Having that entity complete a thought, so to speak, in a song, so completing the lyrics in a song. I've heard that happen, actually, in the context of Parade. Luckily, with the playwright, when he wrote the lyrics, he used actual words that were spoken in the courtroom, and also other, you know, writings from Leo Frank. So we were able to draw in, you know, that context. Then I think we were actually communicating with the ghost of Leo Frank. I don't think so. I believe he's very much resting in peace. But
okay,
because I mean, who's to say that he went to San Diego and possessed, you know, my friend Justin, who played the role? I mean, I don't know if that's possible. But you know, I have a whole thing on Hamlet I could go into with that. but. Yeah, I think, well, you have to have the repeated interactions, asking the same questions, for different responses other than rappings, seeking the vocalizations, asking them to move things.
Okay, yeah, that would give it some identity.
And having the person who was involved in creating the tulpa involved in the process, because that will give you an indication whether you're dealing with a tulpa or dealing with a ghost, because, like I said, I believe that having that person involved in the process, it's their own energy.
Yeah, they'd be able to tell.
They're reacting to. So yeah. I think that would change the dynamic quite a bit.
Well, concentrating on some of these other ghosts that you did find, there was a Victorian woman that was spotted. Was she, her identity ever accounted for?
Not yet. Not at this time. We did find another woman, though.
Oh.
Who is haunting the bathrooms on the third floor of the 10th.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is Carol LaRocque.
Oh, you had a name. That's terrific.
Yeah, we got a whole name and everything. Yeah, she was actually a member of the church. very much one of those high-maintenance OCD members who meant well. She meant well, but I think people were a little bit irritated with her, especially the ones that I interviewed who knew her.
Mm-hmm.
Poor thing. But one of her biggest headaches with the chapel was the bathrooms on the third floor, they weren't hinged correctly, the stall doors in the bathroom. Like some of them would swing in, some of the doors swung out. Some had a right hinge, some had a left hinge, and Carol had a little bit of OCD, and I think that followed her into death, because essentially how we found out that she was haunting the bathrooms was the team kept getting really weird things on their ovulus, like clean, dirty, mess, and they're like, well, what kind of words is, what's going on here? And they were right next to the bathroom. And when they got into the bathroom, the psychic medium on our team was like, wait a minute, there's a woman here. Like, wait, what's going on? So, and through some of our connections with the church, we found out that there was a woman named Carol LaRocque who was very much loved the church. Her funeral was at the theater when it was still a chapel. And apparently that was a big issue that she had with the bathroom doors. And the way that we can get her to talk to us and interact with us is if we make a mess in the bathroom.
No kidding.
so we're talking like throwing paper towels on the floor, like unraveling some toilet paper.
You get her attention.
Putting soap on the sink, making a mess. That's
passive
provocation, I used to call it that.
Subtle provocation.
Yeah, it's fun provocation.
Yeah.
Though. It's not bad provocation.
Yeah.
How about the identity of the little boy? Did you ever ascertain who he was?
You know, we've been, through the interactions we've had through investigations, that he was probably a relative of Missy. We're thinking either a cousin. We don't think it's a sibling because we're not getting that connection, but very much like probably a I was thinking cousin or maybe even a nephew who had passed away. I would say recently, like in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
Because Missy died in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that would very much be familiar territory.
And he's a little later.
For both of those families, which is why I think Missy hangs out at the tent still. But we're still working on it.
Yeah.
We definitely were, I think, successful in identifying Carol. Still trying to find the Victorian woman. But also at the same time, we've learned that the 10th Avenue Theater is very much a, I don't want to use the word hotspot, but the theater takes in a lot of transients. You know, a lot of people come in through and passing through.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I say why not, because that place is, the building's an amazing building. So
yeah,
even
I saw it's beautiful.
When I passed on, I would be happy to go there.
Yeah.
So,
well, now that you're living in North Carolina, Alex, have you started another team, or have you started like another chapter of your original team?
I started a chapter of my original team.
Good.
And we've been trying to get into a few places. There is a Haunted Theater here in Raleigh. We're almost there in getting the connections to get in there. But we have a team out here. We also do a meetup once a month.
Oh, good.
We
yeah.
do it at a really cool location that's also haunted.
Uh-huh.
I won't say it on the air because then, mm-hmm. you know, people have to join our meetup group to get that info. we primarily focus on client cases, taking on the residentials, and then doing the public education aspect through our meetup groups.
So real quickly, do you have another book in the wings?
I do. I'm actually in talks with Llewellyn right now on possibly a second book.
And what's the focus?
Based on a really interesting interaction that we've had with a child who was haunted. Won't say too much yet because
okay.
it's all in the works. But mm-hmm. right now, yeah, we're definitely talking with Llewellyn about a possible another book.
Terrific. Well, Alex, we are at the end of the show, so I know it goes by really quickly, doesn't it? Would you like to give out your website or where people can buy your books?
Yeah. You can pick up a copy of The Haunting of the 10th Avenue Theater on Llewellyn's website, llewellyn.com or Amazon. Just type in Haunting of the 10th Avenue Theater. It'll pop up. It makes a great stocking stuffer for those who still try to find something for your ghost hunter for Christmas. And you can also find me on alexmessduo.com. You can also friend me on Facebook. Type in alexmessduo, and my private page will pop up, and my public page will too. Feel free to like it. You can follow me on Twitter. I accept all friend requests unless you seem like you might have a fake profile, then I won't. But I accept 99% of my friend requests. And yeah, that's basically where people can find me.
Terrific. All right. Alex, thank you. You've been a delightful guest.
Thank you very much,
Alex. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, certainly. Well, you have a good evening.
You too.
All right. Good night.
Thank you, Alex. Good night.
Good night.
All right. Well, that's Spirit Radio, The Paranormal Experience, another week. And we will not be here next week.
That's right.
We're going to take the week off for Christmas, so mm-hmm. we want to wish everybody Merry Christmas.
And wonderful holiday season. And we'll be seeing you in a couple of weeks then. And Craig Mosher's coming on. And that's it for tonight. So thank you, everyone, for listening. Have a good evening.
In this one of many possible worlds, all for the best, or some bizarre test, it is what it is.